Franchised is presented by FakeShep.net with support from Emrysell. If you're looking to buy an iPhone, iPad, MacBook, or any other Apple product, visit Emrysell today. They offer refurbished, top-of-the-line, and next-to-new Apple products at a fraction of the regular price. And if you're looking to sell an Apple product, they'll buy them off you too. Visit Emrysell.com.au.
Well, I think I have a thrush.
What the fuck is a thrush?
Farewell, dear shithead.
The Libyans!
No fucking shit, lady! Do I sound like I'm wearing a piece of shit?
Lick my plate, you dog dick!
In 1983, following films like Animal House and Class Reunion, the National Lampoon's magazine continued to flex their comedic muscle with their fourth theatrical endeavour, Vacation. You're listening to Franchised. My name is Glenn. I'm here with Jarrett. Sean is not at the desk with us for this episode, but he will be back on the mic next month when we discuss a completely different franchise. Stay tuned for that one. In the meantime, National Lampoon's Vacation, starring Chevy Chase, who had previously worked for National Lampoon's magazine, was written by a young writer by the name of John Hughes. It was directed by Harold Ramis, who had just made Caddyshack, and it kickstarted one of the most beloved and celebrated comedy franchises of all time. On this episode, we're going to take a look at the Vacation series from its three official sequels to the strange direct-to-video spin-off, the weird short film, and the recent reboot sequel, plus a rare and totally obscure TV spin-off from the year 2000 that very few people have heard of. So let's hit the road. So here we are, another podcast. Hey, Jarrett.
Hey, Glenn.
So, you ready?
For Vacation.
Let's go.
I was born ready.
So, let's recap. We've got Vacation, which is National Lampoon's Vacation, 1983, followed by European Vacation in 85, Christmas Vacation in 89, Vegas Vacation 97, Christmas Vacation 2, Cousin Eddie's Island Adventure, 2003, Hotel Hell Vacation, and Vacation, 2015. So, my question to you is, what's your first experience with Vacation?
Look, it's sort of hard to remember the first time I saw National Lampoon's Vacation, but I grew up with it as a kid. Like, I mean, our family loved this franchise, and particularly the first film, and it wasn't until I moved to Queensland in about 86 or so, when European Vacation was hitting home video. And I remember renting out European Vacation, partly because it had such a gimmicky cover. Do you remember, like, the video case used to have, like, a strap handle on it, like a suitcase?
I do. And it was a sideways cover.
Yeah, sideways cover. Yeah. And so every time we're at the video store, I used to go to it and grab it sort of thing. The old man would be like, we've watched this movie a million times. Like, seriously. But I'd be, like, so enamored with this gimmicky cover. So, yeah, I think that probably, you know, maybe I started watching this franchise when I was about 4 or 5, but my solid memories are, yeah, from about 6
on. I was the same age. My first experience was seeing the first film at the Dandenong Drive-In.
Wow.
Having my parents sneak me in under a rug. And the only memory I have, and it's a really vivid memory, is the scene where Chevy Chase, they're sitting there with Rusty on a rock drinking beer. And Rusty takes the entire beer and just skulls it. Yeah, do you remember that?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's the only memory, but I remember vividly where I was sitting in the car.
Right, that's
and it was
awesome.
The Dandenong Drive-In. That's the only memory of that place.
Wow, you know, incredible.
Before
dude.
It closed down. So, of the franchise, what's your favourite of the installments? It's a big franchise, and it's a weird franchise.
It's a tough question, but look, I think my favourite's National Lampoon's Vacation, but I'm almost more drawn to rewatching European Vacation. I think there's just so much more happening in European Vacation. They're constantly on the move. It's not, you know, it's Europe as opposed to America.
It's much more episodic.
Absolutely, yeah. And then, but then the one that gets watched every Christmas. Is Christmas Vacation. Yeah. So, yeah, look, it's a tough call, but I'm going to go for the original Vacation. I think every time I think about watching Vacation, in the back of my mind, I go, oh, you know, I love it, but it's quite long. And then I put it on and it's not the case.
Yeah.
You know, it speeds through. And then immediately after, I go, God, I love this movie. Why do I always think I like European Vacation more? Yeah. I love this movie.
Isn't it weird that a number three in a franchise has become this, like, a legacy film?
Totally.
One that every year is annually played and never gets tired.
Yeah.
you've got kids that are, you know, of today's generation that know it and love it. And I think that's insane. When you think it's not only is it a number three, it's a National Lampoon's.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, it's insane. And like, we're almost 30 years on from that film. Next year will be its 30th anniversary. Funny thing is, I remember talking to someone I worked with back at JB back in the day that didn't realise, this is obviously prior to the reboot, sequel, slash, whatever you want to call it, that there was a franchise. They thought that Christmas Vacation was the only movie.
Wow.
And they watched it every Christmas with their family because it was always on TV. And then I'm like, so would you call that your favourite? And they're like, favourite Christmas movie? I'm like, favourite vacation film? They're like, what do you mean favourite? I was like, well, there's a few more.
Yeah.
And they're like, what? And then, there's even Vegas Vacation, which admittedly I've only ever seen once.
Okay, we'll get to that.
We'll get there.
But yeah, wow. I mean, there's also that, there's those people out there that think that the title National Lampoon's is exclusively for the vacation films.
Yeah.
You will say, have you seen National Lampoon's? And they'll cut you off and say, you know, Chevy Chase, I love him.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no, it's actually, that's the brand.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of movies in the brand. Even, you know, three that came before it.
So, yeah, totally.
Strange. So we're gonna break it down. We'll just list each of the films and have a bit of discussion. Won't touch too much on the original Vacation because I guess the gist of this podcast is we talk about the franchise that became.
Of course.
But the original one, it must be noted that it was directed by Harold Ramis, as I mentioned before, written by John Hughes, and it was based on a story called Vacation 59 that John Hughes had written for the National Lampoon's magazine. Starred Chevy Chase, Beverly D'Angelo, Randy Quaid, John Candy, Anthony Michael Hall, Eugene Levy, Dana Barron, Christie Brinkley. It's a huge cast. A fairly notable cast too. Like, some of those were, you know, fairly established names at the time.
But what about John Candy though? That was probably a bit of a breakout role for him, would it have been?
Yes, and it is the role that they, I believe, I could be wrong, and someone will probably bloody fact check me on this one, but I think that was the role that led them to invite him to be Rick Moranis' character in Ghostbusters. Was that around the same time?
Well, that was 83, yeah. And so what was the original Vacation? It was 83. Yeah. Oh, no. Well, Ghostbusters, sorry, was 84. This is 83. So, yeah.
So I have a funny feeling that because of the look of his character in this one, they wanted him to be that Lewis character.
Right.
And he declined it. I don't know why. It's probably out there.
Could not see anyone but
Rick Moranis.
Rick Moranis playing that part.
Also, how dweeby is John Candy?
I know, but he's such a... He's like a sort of... He'd be big and a little bit more, you know, jolly and clumsy as opposed to just meek and nerdy and
So this film came after Animal House, which was the first, of course, and National Lampoon's had a few TV movies beforehand too, like Disco Beaver from Outer Space.
Right, is that one of those sketch sort of
things? A bit like Groove Tube and Kentucky Fried Movie. And what else came after it? Class Reunion, as I mentioned. Then there was another sex movie. I can't remember the name of it. I wish I could remember.
Something. I know. I'm sure it's one I haven't seen, but I've actually seen the art for it. And I always have. Should have a cool artwork back then.
So anyway, I digress. The film was a runaway hit. It was directed by, as I said, Harold Ramis had just come off Caddyshack.
Oh, wow.
So, I mean, what a big follow-up to Caddyshack. Yeah. And what did he do next? I think it was bloody Club Paradise.
Robin Williams.
Yes. Which, actually, there's a little bit of a connection there, too, because at one point in time, they were pitching a Castaway installment of the Vacation franchise.
Right, which
would have been very much like a Club Paradise. Anyway, it spawned a sequel not long after, which was European Vacation, which that one was directed by Amy Heckerling. She's the director of Fast Times at Ridgemont High, Look Who's Talking, Clueless.
Yeah,
great director. Just to name some. She's a fantastic comedy director.
Absolutely.
What do you think about the juxtaposition between those two films? Because they feel very different.
They do. The second one feels more like a patchwork sort of piece in my mind. The first one's pretty linear. Like, it's moving. We know where we're going for the entire thing. Whereas European Vacation's a little bit all over the shop. They're seeing different things. And despite all the stuff that happens in Vacation that kind of upsets the travel of getting to Wally's world, in the second film, it feels like every little event that happens leads to some other side adventure almost.
No, I get your drift.
Yeah, I think that's why I like that.
The first one begins with an A to Z. You know where you're starting, you know where you're going to end.
Yeah.
Whereas, the European one, other than the fact they're going to Europe, you have no idea where this one's leading.
Does it start with the game show at the start?
Yes.
Yeah.
What was that called? Picking a poke.
Yeah.
Which is completely inappropriate if you were to try and get away with that these days with that, like, pedophile game show host played by John Astin.
When he starts
pashing Audrey, who is only, 13, 14?
Yeah, super creepy.
Insane. So it was contrary to popular belief, written by a writer called Robert Klein. A lot of people think that John Hughes wrote number two.
I always thought that.
John Hughes has denied his involvement. Like, if you read up on it, he actually says he had nothing to do with it, even though he has his writer's credit.
Incredible.
And that's all due to the fact that he had written material for the first film that ended up in this one.
So they used
recycled stuff and a couple of jokes from the first film. So he got a writer's credit, but according to him, there's not much of him in it, which surprises me because it feels very John Hughes.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
You know, the roundabout scene, all those kind of sight gags.
Maybe that's it. Maybe because this one seems more like a bit of a patchwork, it feels like there's elements of John Hughes about it, but not quite in the whole structure.
Yeah.
Because you look at the body of work, the things he was writing around that time, around 85, was Breakfast Club? Was that 85?
Yes, probably. Well, the next film he did would have been Weird Science.
Yes,
right.
Yes.
Because
Anthony
Michael Hall chose to do that instead of European.
Right.
When he made that decision, then they chose to recast the kids entirely.
Both of them. Yeah.
Both of them, which is a bit of a hit for Dana Barron because she was probably eager to do another one.
I always feel like that's kind of weird. I feel a bit bitter about that. Yeah, you know, just because Anthony Michael Hall didn't want to return, you miss out on your gig.
Well, she did come back for Christmas Vacation 2.
Yep, yep.
As Audrey. Right, so she got her second coming, but, you know...
Wow. But no one saw it.
No.
Well, I mean, you did. But I still haven't watched it.
I've seen it
15 years later.
I've seen it several times.
Yeah.
And I'll explain myself later. So, of course, as well, being a European film, it's got a little bit of a British cast. You have Eric Idle in there and Mel Smith. And actually, Eric Idle and Chevy Chase became really good mates after making this. And they started writing a new vacation film together. That was going to be called National Lampoon's Australian Vacation.
Oh, man.
And they couldn't get past a few shark gags, so they let the whole thing go.
That's really disappointing, because that film still need to be made.
Yeah, there's a lot of material.
Well, hopefully, maybe that's something that could be considered for the future.
Should they?
And bring Eric Idle back, because he'd be a great writer.
Yeah, yeah, no, so that's something I've always thought. You know, there's so many places in the world to go.
Yeah.
You know, I was always baffled why they would go to Vegas when you've got an entire world, other than the fact that there's probably a lot of money in it for them to go to Vegas.
Yeah, true, yeah. A lot of kickbacks.
Yeah, exactly right. So, anyway, one more thing to add to this is the guy that played Rusty was called Jason Lively.
Jason Lively from Night of the Creeps.
Boom.
Yeah, I love it.
Blake Lively's brother.
Yes, now you told me this and it's blown my mind.
I know.
Her brother.
Yes.
But how much age difference between those two?
I don't know. I should have researched it, but it's weird. Just that fact. And it's actually Google them, they're on red carpets together. They're clearly siblings.
Yeah, yeah.
I think they might be half siblings, but you know that means nothing to me. That's still a sibling.
Well, the funny thing is, look, and if Jason Lively ends up listening to this, which I highly doubt, because he's too busy pursuing projects at the moment, because we've seen him in so many films since Night of the Creeps and
I'm going to hashtag him.
He's not, but
I'm going to hashtag him.
But look at him and look at Blake Lively. It's there's definitely some other blood in there. It's some better. Better jeans. I don't know.
I'm not going to hashtag it.
I'm sorry, Jason.
But anyway, European Vacation. Is there anything else you want to share with that one? You got to the good stuff with the video art and things like that.
That's clever
marketing.
Yeah.
And I just want to quickly touch upon the first two films had poster art that was very well connected with each other. It was done by a famous artist called Boris Vallejo.
Right.
Or Vallejo. I don't know how to pronounce it. Now, he's... the guy that also did the Barbarella, Deathstalker, Knight Riders, Q, The Winged Serpent, Empire Strikes Back. He's a prominent fantasy artist. Yeah. My favorite band in the world, Ween, wrote a whole song dedicated to him. Yeah, so I think his artwork for those first two films is so iconic.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, if you had these hanging in your
I've got a day bill of European Vacation. Really? Yeah, got the Aussie day bill of it, which is quite cool.
I love them. And they then went ahead with different artwork for the third and fourth film, which are also... the same as each other.
Yeah.
So it's interesting how they've broken the four films into two different kind of design. Anyway, that's something I just wanted to add because, you know, it's interesting.
Yeah, I didn't realize who the designer was of those posters. Yeah, they're terrific. Amazing art. Like, because, you know, comedies should never have probably had as great art as those. And I think that's what helped make them iconic.
Totally true. And that artist still has a website and you can buy his art. He's still kicking, still making art. So
very cool.
Very cool. He's doing a lot of video game stuff now, I believe.
That makes sense.
Yeah. All right, on to Christmas Vacation.
Christmas Vacation.
Do you watch it every year?
Almost every year. I say every year. The intention there is to watch it every year. But we did watch it last year.
Yes.
So it was good to revisit it. It's always funny rewatching it and seeing how many familiar faces are in it that were just before any of their careers really hit a massive, you know, Julie Louis-Dreyfus.
Mm-hmm.
and old mate from Roseanne that
it's
went on to
very
Big Bang.
Interconnected. Yeah, Jonathan Galecki. You had Juliette Lewis.
Yes, great.
Yes. Who else was in this one?
Now I always forget his name. The old chap. Is it Helen's? Is it Helen's grandfather?
Oh, the one with the cigar?
Yeah. He's like in Monkey Trouble, and he's like in a million movies. He's in Forget Paris, you know, that guy. Yes. I love that guy. I can't remember his name.
But... Doris Roberts from Everyone Loves Raymond. There's a lot of sitcom connections to this one, because Julie Louis-Dreyfus did Seinfeld, Jonathan Galecki did Roseanne, as well as Big Bang Theory, and Doris Roberts from... What is it? Everyone Loves Raymond. It's interesting, isn't it? But most of them were unheard of at the time. And they were... What a stark contrast with the children compared to the last films, because Jonathan Galecki was like, 11, 12 when he made this? He's a tiny little rusty compared to his previous counterparts. Yeah. Interesting decision. What do you reckon is behind it? Maybe to make it more family friendly?
Well, that I think the whole scope of the film, that's what I was going to mention, is that the first two films feel that they've got a riskier sense of humour about them.
Mm-hmm.
You got a lot more sex jokes in the, you know, you got the first one, you've got the skinny dipping, and the second one you've got, you know, I think he's going to pork her. And, you've got the, you know, the shower sequence where she's being filmed. Chevy Chase is filming and Clark's filming her, and then it ends up on the billboards or whatnot. You've got all that sort of racy sort of stuff that happens, and then that's sort of toned down completely in the third sort of, and I think completely gone by the time we hit the fourth film, which is a super family version. But it feels like, I think they're trying to build more of a family scope. And maybe that's why it's become this sort of Christmas kind of classic, because you can kind of gather the whole family around. I mean, he has his outburst, which is like one of the cinema's greatest moments.
It really
is. Fucking amazing.
I think there's 50 insults in that one outburst.
It's insane. It's so good. I had to rewind it last year when we watched it just to see it again, because I lost it so much during the first lot that I just couldn't hear over my own laugh. So I rewatched that scene again. And that stuff's great, because that stuff, you know, I know it's 89, so it's on the cusp of the 90s where everything started getting a little bit more toned down, but you could still get away with a bit of swearing in a film like that. Like, I'm assuming that one would have probably got a PG in Australia.
Yeah, I reckon.
And it's released.
No, it got an M in Australia.
Must have had to have, because he said the F word.
I remember it had the M.
You know.
And it was also based off a short story that John Hughes had written for National Lampoon's called Christmas 59, which was a sequel to the original story.
A direct sequel to the original story.
So he agreed to come back to this one based on the fact that he wouldn't do it unless he could find a good story. And that's when he tapped into the old material and found one that was based on the same source material. And
maybe he was feeling the pinch that he wasn't going to make the 90s, because John Hughes, that transition from the 80s and 90s didn't really work.
Yeah.
And he's like, he was doing that year, he would have done career opportunities. I think that would have been 89, 90.
Well, yeah, I mean, this was the beginning of the shift, really. Yeah. I mean, you also had Great Outdoors.
I forget about the Home Alone movies.
Well, Home Alone came after this.
I forget about those. He did make it into the 90s, but in a family manner.
Yeah, and as far as a director, in a directing capacity. But the connection here with Home Alone is that Chris Columbus was originally going to direct Christmas Vacation and had too many clashes with Chevy Chase.
Wow.
So John Hughes actually stepped in and gave Chris Columbus Home Alone instead.
That's like
such
a gifted thing. Like, have the biggest...
That is the gift that kept on giving.
Oh, amazing.
Which led to a whole lot of other stuff. I mean, he was already an established director, and I think he would have been pretty good in this as a director.
Yeah.
But as it is, you know, it's a great film. Directed by Jeremiah Chekik, went on to do Benny and June.
Oh, yes, with Johnny Depp and... Mary Stuart Mastantoni. No, the other one, Mary Masterson.
Maybe.
No, something Masterson.
Fried Green Tomatoes chick.
Yes.
Yeah. What is her name?
Masterson. Masterson.
Dude, we're the experts here.
Yeah, I know.
He also directed Diabolique and The Right Kind of Wrong.
Oh, the remake.
Mm.
Right, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So I'd always sort of thought he was a director that really didn't have much to his name, but apparently he went on to a few good things.
Pretty different things,
The Right Kind of Wrong was fairly recent with Ryan Kwanton, the Aussie actor from True Blood.
Don't know if I saw it.
No, I didn't either.
I feel like I might have.
I know the poster very well.
Mm.
Anyway, I digress.
Sounds like a plane movie.
So we should also mention, we haven't talked about Randy Quaid yet, because
he
was fundamental in parts 2 and 3 as Cousin Eddie.
Yes. Parts 1 and 3. He was absent from
Europe.
He didn't make it to Europe.
I meant to say parts 1.
Should have made
three.
It to Europe. Jeez, imagine that fish out of water scenario. Oh, that'd have been hilarious.
How the hell would he have gotten there?
He would never have got out of Europe. Yeah, it'd have been great.
I think he's a real asset to number 3.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Sorry, Clark. Well, actually, I don't. I always fuck this line up.
Okay.
Sorry, Clark. The shitter was full.
Yeah.
I can't remember that. I'm pretty sure it's like...
Everyone says it differently.
Yeah.
Shitter's full. Shitter was full.
Yeah. It's such a great moment.
On television, it's crap is full.
Oh, How dare they sanitize that? Yeah, it's such a great sequence.
He does have the worst line in the film, though, that pisses me off every time is when he looks at the camera and goes, bingo.
Yeah, yeah.
Terrible adage. Yeah. Terrible adage.
Don't like that director dress.
No.
Only works sometimes.
Yeah, that's right. And one little point of reference that you'd probably like is the fact that it was shot on the Warner Brothers backlot.
Very cool.
The house that they live in was also the Murtaugh's house from Lethal Weapon.
Very cool. Very
actually,
cool.
Actually, the house the neighbors lived in. So, oh, right, the Julie okay. Louis-Dreyfus. That's okay. The Murtaugh's house.
All right. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I've been to that Warner backlot. That's where the Monster Squad was shot there, too. I mean, they've shot a lot of stuff there, like Gilmore Girls. But if you do go there, the setup and the layout's very similar to the town center in Monster Squad to this date. And that freaks me out because that's like 30 years ago. More bloody than 30 hell. Years ago. Incredible.
Incredible. Mm. All right.
On I digress.
The next one. First, actually, before we get to the next one, a little bit of a word from our sponsor.
If you're looking for a new Mac product, MResell is the place for you. Don't throw your money away on stupidly expensive Apple gear when MResell provides top-of-the-line, totally refurbished products across the Apple range. Whether you need a new iPhone, iMac, Mac Pro, iPad, or other Apple products, visit MResell. And if you're looking to sell your Apple gear for whatever reason, MResell can offer a generous price with full data erasure, fast payment, and free shipping. Visit MResell's website to see for yourself. FakeShemp.net uses their products, and they wouldn't steer you wrong. Visit MResell.com.au.
All right, so that brings us to Vegas Vacation. This is a strange sequel. In my mind, it's almost unrecognizable. This it begins on a flat note, where the other films had the classic, Lindsay Buckingham intro music, Holiday Road. The third film had, a mock version of a Lindsay Buckingham song.
Right, right.
This one just begins with a Beach Boys song and Clark in a car driving like a maniac. It begins with a bum note. There's little magic in the film. It all feels forced. Clark's character is unrecognizable. He's turned into a mean-spirited, cantankerous,
absolutely
self-centered, selfish prick.
Very representative of probably who Chevy Chase is as a person.
Exactly right. Yeah. Which really contradicts the Clark that they've established in previous films, who's a family-orientated man. He is selfless. Mm. He's all about family. He's all about doing stuff for other people. So I don't know where it came from that they've changed the series so much. The movie ditched the National Lampoon's banner, so immediately it separates itself.
And this is the, well, up until the sequel reboot, this is the longest stretch of time we've had between these films.
Yes.
Because this one's, Christmas Vacation's 89 and this is 97?
Yes.
So it's a long stretch of time. And, I mean, Chevy Chase as an actor too was on a downward spiral.
Yep.
His films throughout the 90s, you had Cops and Robinsons maybe 93. Then he did that one with Jonathan Taylor Thomas, Man of the House or something
That's
like
right.
that.
That's right, yeah.
And so he was an actor pretty much that was on the outer.
He's
down on his chips, just like he is in this film.
He needed to fall back on a reliable franchise, but even still, this was a reliable franchise until this point. It's essentially feels like one giant cash grab. It's like a big fat commercial. Every single character in it is caricatured. Yeah. Even Cousin Eddie, who was arguably the only caricature in the other films, is even more caricatured in this one. I don't know. He walks around wearing flippers because he's just been in the pool. It's everything about him is
just over the top.
Over the top.
It's a shame. I mean, having a setting like this in Vegas, Vegas is where dreams are made and broken.
Yep.
More often than not, broken.
Yep.
But Vegas also lends itself to being a very funny location film. You've had The Hangover, Honeymoon in Vegas, a lot of films that take place in Vegas that just generate humor. This almost feels, like you said, with Chevy Chase's character, a bit mean-spirited. Gambling is an ugly thing.
Yep.
It's a disease like any other, alcoholism, all of these things. So, I don't know. It's weird for a film. And this one was the first in the franchise, I believe, up until that point, to be a PG, PG-13 release in the US.
Yep.
That this one was probably going to be more family-orientated, and they said it in the least family place.
Absolutely.
People go to Bucks parties there. People have divorce parties there. 21st birthdays there. They don't go on family vacations there.
And the fact that they'd previously pitched that Australian adventure, there were so many more locations they could have gone to.
So much better.
But anyway, there's not much to add about the Vegas Vacation. I think it's a misstep. It's probably the end of the line for the franchise up until the reboot. What else? I mean, there's some thing that pops up on, websites and whatnot, a bit of trivia, that Chevy Chase had originally pitched the idea for Swiss Family Griswold, which was a story where they had found themselves deserted on an island. They were originally on a cruise. They jumped ship when they thought there was a fire breaking out that turned out not to be a fire. find themselves on a deserted island where they come across Cousin Eddie and his family. And convenient because that leads right into the next film, which, you know, the Griswold story never eventuated like that, but Cousin Eddie's story did, which brings us to Christmas Vacation 2, Cousin Eddie's Island Adventure. There's not much to be said about this. It was a direct-to-DVD or direct-to-video release.
Right, yeah, yeah.
The only installment actually written by Matty Simmons, who was the producer of the entire franchise. Bad green screen, bad script. The characters are just stupid. Cousin Eddie is a pale reflection of what he used to be. He's now a lovable, family-orientated dad.
You're the opposite.
He's got suddenly there's a grandfather figure that we've never seen before. There's children we've never heard of before. That's about all I've got to say about
that. What about there is a returning cast member from the original?
Dana Barron, of course. Right. Yeah, so the original Audrey returns, which is kind of going against the whole joke of the kids rotating per movie.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So to bring her back was just a bit of a, like, we've got to connect this somehow.
Right.
Because Beverly D'Angelo had originally considered being in this one.
Really?
Yes, and she had too many family commitments. Okay. Do it. That's always the out.
That's a good out.
Yeah. She read the script.
Yeah, yeah.
So they did bring back the National Lampoon's banner, which I guess may have tarnished it a little bit. So there's that. And then the next in the franchise was Hotel Hell Vacation. So
that was cool.
This was a short film that was broken into a series of commercials which aired during the 2010 Super Bowl. So aside from a few average gags, I think the overall film, which runs for about 14 minutes, you can find it on YouTube. I highly recommend you catch it. Recaptures the true essence of the Vacation series. Clark, unlike Vegas Vacation, is back to his lovable self. And the character's nuances are very much in line with the first three films. And I don't know, it's 14 minutes long, but I think it's a true sequel.
I think it works because you've got them trying to, reignite the flame in their relationship. And I buy into that sort of stuff. I think that this could have been a great sequel, feature sequel.
Totally.
Film. I'd have been with
it. And this was just before that moment where Beverly D'Angelo's face was stung by 1,000 bees. So anyway, there's not much to add, only that I recommend if you've never heard of Hotel Hell Vacation, go and do it because it is the last hurrah for the Griswolds. As far as Sparky and, Alan are concerned. Yeah. And then they went ahead and made a reboot / remake / sequel. Vacation, which was made in 2015, does not have the National Lampoon's banner on it, but it is one hell of a fucking funny movie. It was directed by John Francis Daly, who was a little kid from Freaks and Geeks, as well as Jonathan Goldstein. They're a directing duo. Also the guys behind the recent Game Night. They were the writers of Spider-Man Homecoming. They made Horrible Bosses. So they're a comedy pair to be reckoned with. Yeah. And I just think this is a fantastic film, let alone a sequel. I think it just works on every account.
Yeah, yeah. There's a few exceptions. I think that we will disagree on just... I think it's a fantastic film. It's hilarious. It's great. It's exactly what the franchise needed.
Yep.
But yeah, there are a couple scenes that just didn't sort of gel for me. That Mexican standoff at the four points where, they meet to have some sort of sexual tryst.
There is a scene where the four states convene and the two main characters decide that they will have sex on the four points so that they can say they've had sex in every state.
Yeah.
Cops come along to bust them, blah, blah, blah. The initial gag itself is straight out of the original film.
Works.
It is a really good gag, but they really run with it too long.
Totally, and they bring way too many people into a shameless sort of cameo Armageddon.
Speaking of cameos, the film is full of them. The main stars are Ed Helms and Christina Applegate. Skylar Gazondo's in it, and then there's cameos from Leslie Mann, Chris Hemsworth, Charlie Day, Keegan-Michael Key, Ron Livingston, Michael Pena, Colin Hanks, and a whole lot more. And what's that guy's name from Walking Dead?
Norman Reedus. Norman Reedus.
Oh,
yeah.
His cameo is fantastic.
I was just going to say, what's his name? What's Thor's name again? I always get the brothers confused.
Chris Hemsworth.
He's Thor. He's the one that's in this.
Yes.
He is it's not even a cameo. It's like a decent part, a massive part, if you've seen the movie.
In the whole narrative of Vacation, his role kind of takes the place of Cousin Eddie. It fills that gap. Different kind of character, but structurally, that's what it is. Fantastic cameo.
Fantastic.
Yeah, the film itself, it recaptures the whole episodic nature of the original. It redoes the story. It's Rusty trying to relive that famous vacation that he remembers from his childhood. There's a fantastic moment when he's looking through his family album at the past vacations, and each page he flips on is a photo from the previous movies with the different Rustys and Audreys.
So good.
Fantastic. There is a fantastic... fantastic nod to the audience about this about this being a reboot slash sequel, which I think everyone needs to listen to.
So you just want to redo your vacation from 30 years ago? Don't you think that's going to be kind of a letdown?
No. We're not redoing anything. This will be completely different. For one thing, the original vacation had a boy and a girl. This one has two boys. And I'm sure that there will be lots of other differences.
I've never even heard of the original vacation.
Doesn't matter. The new vacation will stand on its own. Okay?
And that cracks me up every time.
Yeah, it's a good moment.
It is. It's a real cheap moment, but it works so well. Now, the biggest letdown, I think, in this film is Chevy Chase and Beverly D'Angelo.
Undoubtedly.
They don't belong in it.
No.
They've turned Clark into a bitter, twisted prick of a man. He's not funny. I think the biggest mistake was letting Chevy Chase on the set with an opinion because it looks like he commandeered the whole thing.
Yeah, it's complete improv, real throwback to his SNL stuff. It's just needless physical comedy that just doesn't work. Well, other comedians can pull that stuff off, but it doesn't work for him, not in this day and age.
No.
And it's sad. And yes, it needed to exist. Did it need to exist in the film? No. Should it have been a deleted scene? Yes. Because I think if we'd watched it out of context of the film, we could have gone, oh, it's good to see them again. Kind of glad they didn't include that in the film.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
But yeah, it's a shame that it's in there.
And the odd thing about it is that the one practical physical gag that he throws in there is the same gag he pulled in Caddyshack 2, the exact same gag. Now, that's arguably one of the worst.
He probably doesn't remember it because of all that coke he did in the 80s.
Yeah, that's so true. And that's one of the considered one of the worst comedies of all time. So why would you rehash a joke from that?
Didn't work the first time around. I was going to say, like, Ed Helms makes for a great, you know, new Clark in this film because he is lovable. I think that he doesn't have that suave, cool nature of Chevy Chase.
He's dorky.
That, you know, he's dorky.
Yeah.
But it works because everything he does for the family, which is inherently Clark.
Yes.
So he makes...
And he's not the same character, so he needs to have that...
No, absolutely.
And Christina Applegate is also a fantastic, counteract.
Was it... what's her character's name? Debbie? Debbie Does Anything?
Debbie Does Anything,
Was it Debbie Does Anything? Yeah. So good. That sequence, hilarious. Yeah. I almost pissed myself.
Not only that sequence, but the gag that flows on from that throughout the entire film.
Yeah.
Because they keep referencing back to it.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, gold.
I love it. I think it's a great film. I think it was savaged by the critics. Mm. I think it's a film that was not made for critics.
Yeah.
Speaking of someone that reviews films, I think the critics misunderstood it. I don't think they put context into it.
Well, what about... There's two critics out there that actually really dug this film. Both of them reviewed it on our website. It was you and I.
Yes.
It's one of those few occasions we both reviewed the same film because it came out and we were both just so enamored with it and we had to talk about it. We did a review and I'm sure both of our reviews are super positive.
Well,
I can't wait to go back and read them.
Yes, I love having multiple reviews of the one film just because it adds a bit of perspective to the said films. And yeah, we both adored this film. I saw it with a full audience and there was not one person in that audience that wasn't belly laughing. That's exactly what it's supposed to do. Why was that not reflected in the overall box office or the critical acclaim?
That's it. Now, on a heartbreaking note, I read recently on IMDb when I was looking up the director, John Francis Daly. I was looking at Game Night because I went and saw that theatrically, which was quite good. But I saw on his IMDb director's filmography that he's got a film that's been announced called Vacation Guide to the Solar System. I got so excited, and it was like a whole 30 seconds of excitement until I clicked. With MBN these days.
Yep.
It was less than 30 seconds of the click, and then my heart just broke when I realized that it is not connected to the Vacation franchise. But Glenn, my question to you is, will they make another Vacation film? And will it be in this universe of Vacation, or will you just completely reboot it?
Well, I'll answer the question you didn't ask, and that is, yes, I would love them to make another one.
Yes.
The question you asked, no, I don't think they will. I mean, this one is just so maligned. I mean, I don't know too many people that speak fondly of it, within the film circle anyway.
Yeah.
Granted, we don't particularly hang around with what you would consider the everyday schmoes, like that go to the movies. We hang out with filmmakers and writers, so it's a different kind of people. I don't know many people love it.
Yeah.
Aside from you and myself.
True.
But it works for us, so it should work for everyone, damn it.
Totally. But look, I'm not afraid of them in 5-6 years' time. If they want to reboot it and start it all again,
as in a remake.
Yeah, I'll be there because I want to see this franchise through. With the exception of Cousin Eddie's Island, I think I'll probably save that one until I'm on my deathbed and then watch it in case I get a question when I'm at the pearly gates. It's like, and in National Lampoon's Cousin Eddie's Island, Christmas Island, whatnot,
da, da. I'm like, you're kidding. No, I didn't. I've seen all these films countless times. Well, Vegas Vacation once. And Vacation once. But what? No.
When you're on your deathbed, I'll hand you the DVD. You can admire the cover because it's got some cool artwork. Yeah. And that's about it.
That's it.
Anyway, so the reboot. Yeah, sequel, go ahead. They won't, but anyway, that brings us to the end of the Vacation franchise. It's a very wish-washy franchise that has three incredibly solid films to begin with and closes with what we would consider to be a solid film as well, an R-rated solid film at that.
Totally.
But it needs to be R-rated for the contemporary audience that, you know, we live in a Jap Apatow world. That's what
the kids want. They want the edgy comedy. They want to see some shit.
And hey,
literally, they want to see shit. And they want to see people covered in shit.
Did you just channel Ed Helms then?
Yeah. Maybe.
Anyway, I think that not only that, the first film was very edgy at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, even the second film. Yeah, you know, yeah, more absolutely. So. Yeah, more yeah. So. By the time we hit that third film, that's when we got into that family value sort of era.
Okay, so before we wrap this up, I want to mention there was a lost film kind of in the franchise. There was a film in 2000 called National Lampoon's American Adventure. It was directed by a guy called Troy Miller. He's a very prominent comedy director. He did Dumb and Dumberer. Arguably not a very good film.
When Harry Met Lloyd.
Yeah. Run.
Oh, hang on, was it that one? When Harry Met Lloyd? Yes. Oh, God. Yeah.
But that's because he's mainly a TV director. Yeah, he also did Arrested Development, Parks and Rec, Flight of the Conchords, Tenacious D, Mr. Show, a whole lot more.
Yeah, yeah.
And this particular film starred Gary Cole and Helen Slater.
Gary Cole?
Yes.
Really?
From Office Space. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah. American Gothic, the TV series. Yeah.
And Helen
Brady
Slater.
Brady Bunch movie?
Yep.
Yep.
And Helen Slater, Supergirl.
Wow. Oh, wow.
Yes. So this film was made but never ever released. Back in the day, there was an IMDb page for it. It had the running time, had a poster which was very reminiscent of Wet Hot American Summer.
Okay.
You know, that brand of poster. Yeah. It was apparently a spin-off. It was a road trip movie about a couple with their children, you know, doing the same thing.
Yeah, yeah.
Kind of like almost like a pilot, I guess, for a TV show maybe.
Right.
And
the
film just never ever appeared anywhere. And if you go back to the IMDb entry now, all the details have been changed. It's now listed as an 8-minute film, same stars, but the synopsis is different. There's no poster.
Right, right.
Yeah, so whatever happened to that?
Dude, you know what we need to do? We need to see like Billy Crank or someone like that that's at one of these cons to talk to Helen Slater. She seems like she might do cons because she was Supergirl. Or, you know, Gary Cole, because I'm sure he's done a lot of those sort of stuff too.
Definitely.
And ask them,
yep,
what the hell is the deal with this film? All there's probably a documentary in there. It's going to be like that Corman Doom documentary about the making of the Fantastic
Four
mission. Film.
We are going to find out what the hell happened to National Lampoon's American Adventure, and I'm a tenacious prick, and I'm going to do that. Mark my word. All right, so that brings us to the end of this brand new podcast called Franchise. It's been fun. We're going to pick a franchise every month and talk about it. But we have another podcast coming up in 2 weeks' time. Would you like to tell us about that?
It's called Rewind and Digress, where we take a focus film, we talk about it at length, then we deviate from that specific film and talk about the filmmaker, maybe some other films, all sorts of other things, anything that's probably not directly that film. That's Rewind and Digress.
So we've essentially taken one of our favourite snippets from the previous podcast and we've elaborated and made it into a whole show. So I'm looking forward to that. That's going to be every 2 weeks. We'll have this podcast every alternating 2 weeks. In between, we'll have the What the Fuck Is That micro podcast. Heaps going on. It's been a pleasure sitting here with you. We'll have Sean back on the mic with us. I'd like to thank Emrysel. It's good to have them on board and we'll catch you next time.
I don't want to tell them what a cheap, lying, no good, rotten, four-flushing, low-life, snake-licking, dirt-eating, inbred, overstuffed, ignorant, blood-sucking, dog-kissing, brainless, dickless, hopeless, heartless, fat-ass, bug-eyed, stiff-legged, spotty-lipped, worm-headed sack of monkey shit he is. Hallelujah. Holy shit. Where's the Tylenol?